This installment of Kosher Tidbits is dedicated with gratitude to my teachers in chemistry, the first of them being my late father, Alav HaShalom, a career pharmacist who was always the first one I turned to when I had a question about chemistry. In this installment, we will examine the chemical industry and the principles that underlie the kosher certification of chemicals. It will probably come as no surprise that a chemical can be defined as a substance produced in a chemical reaction. The starting substances of a chemical reaction are called, you guessed it, reactants. A chemical reaction entails more than just a physical change, such as the transformation of ice to water. A chemical reaction involves changes in the building blocks of matter. In other words, changes in molecules, those groups of atoms held together by chemical forces. These changes typically come about through collisions between molecules that involve rearrangements of the structure of their electrons, one of the particles that make up an atom. There are various results from chemical reactions, depending on what kind of reaction was initiated. Two substances may combine to form one product, or vice versa. For example, an ion is an atom that has gained an electric charge by losing or gaining an electron. Salt is the combination of sodium ions and chloride ions, and can in principle be produced by reacting sodium with chlorine. In another type of reaction, the atoms of one element might replace those of another element in a product. In some reactions, two entirely new combinations of elements may be produced. For example, the reaction between calcium chloride and sodium carbonate forms calcium carbonate and sodium chloride. Heat can increase the rate of the reaction because it increases the amount of effective collisions. Another way to increase the reaction rate is to introduce a catalyst. The first step in kosher certification will be to determine the kosher fitness of these reactants and catalysts. This is because OU policy, as set by our halachic authorities, is that no non-kosher raw material be used to manufacture a kosher-certified food, no matter how little is used. Neither may an unapproved raw material be used in the manufacture of a certified non-food item. To understand why, we must examine a concept within the dietary laws, known as bittul, that is to say, nullification. Sometimes, the volume of a forbidden substance is so minuscule, it is considered nullified in the totality of the mixture. The mixture would be viewed as permissible despite the presence of the unkosher item. For example, let us say that one is cooking a beef stew large enough to serve 20 people. A mischievous child throws a fluid ounce of lard into the stew. Assuming that the lard is not discernible, it will be considered nullified due to its small volume relative to the stew, and the stew will be permissible under kosher law. There is, however, another principle in kosher law. Ein mevatlin iser l'chatchila. One may not deliberately introduce a small amount of a forbidden substance into a much larger amount of a permitted substance, relying on nullification to preserve its kosher status. Even ex post facto, the mixture may be impermissible despite the nullification. This is a principle that is very relevant in kosher certification. We will not certify any food that is produced by using a non-kosher raw material, even if the non-kosher substance is nullified. Nor will we certify any non-food item that is produced using unacceptable raw materials. At a minimum, giving a kosher certification under those impaired conditions would be what is called mechuar, that is, repugnant. Based on this, we can well understand the concern with the kosher fitness of the reactants and catalysts. In addition to focusing on the reactants and catalysts, we are also concerned with the kosher fitness of the manufacturing equipment. Kosher law tells us that, under certain conditions, non-kosher substances can be absorbed by the walls of a vessel or by the surface of an apparatus. That would not create problems for certification in and of itself. However, kosher law also tells us that there are conditions under which those forbidden substances will be extracted from the utensil and absorbed into the substance that's in contact with the utensil. For example, if my neighbor uses a frying pan for bacon and eggs, and I use that same pan to make an omelet, the omelet typically absorbs a non-kosher bacon flavor from the pan. This is so even if I had cleaned the frying pan of any non-kosher residue. This kind of absorption is usually a problem due to the concept of ta'am ke'ikar. This principle tells us that the absorbed, perceived flavor of a forbidden substance renders a food impermissible. The chemical industry employs numerous methods to produce chemicals. These processes may very well compromise the kosher status of the equipment if the raw materials used are non-kosher. Filtration, for example, is a process used to separate solids from a liquid called the filtrate. Evaporation is a process in which a liquid is turned into a vapor. This is done to separate it from another liquid or from a solid that was dissolved in it. One way this can happen is by applying heat to the liquid. Another way to accomplish evaporation is to reduce the air pressure around the liquid. The liquid molecules will naturally move to a region of lower pressure. Evaporation can be used to extract juice, oil, or pectin from the pulp or peels of fruit. Distillation is a process very much akin to evaporation. In distillation, a substance made up of two or more liquids is boiled. Each of the liquid components has a different boiling point, so each liquid becomes a gas at a different time. As the different vapors are produced, they are captured and cooled down to the point where they become liquids. These liquids are collected in a separate receptacle. Distillation is used for purification and refinement. Chromatography is a process in which individual components of a chemical mixture are separated out. It involves a group of chemicals moving across or through another chemical. The components of the mixture you want to break down approach the other chemicals at different rates and end up separated out into individual bands. As mentioned earlier, the processes employed in the manufacture of chemicals may compromise the kosher status of the equipment and apparatus. These compromised devices may then remove the kosher status of the kosher raw materials they come in contact with. That is due to the ta'am ki'ikar concept we elucidated previously. For this reason, we sometimes end up kosherizing equipment for a company that is new to the OU. We also ensure that a system is in place to maintain the kosher status of the equipment. There will be times when ta'am ki'ikar does not apply and ein mevatlin isur lechatchila does not apply. Let us say that a company wants certification for sevanium crystals, and let us assume that this substance is lethal upon ingestion. In that case, the OU-certified product would not be classified as a food in the eyes of Jewish law due to its being nifsal, disqualified, for human consumption. Therefore, we would not be concerned about the compromised status of the equipment as long as an OU-approved industrial standard was met in cleaning the equipment of non-kosher residue. Our discussion of the chemical industry would be incomplete without describing the special requirements for Passover. It's common knowledge that there are special dietary laws for the holiday of Passover. While the usage of unleavened bread is well known, the laws of Passover extend far beyond that. Generally speaking, any fermented product of wheat, barley, spelt, rye, or oats is forbidden during Passover. And except for the Jews of the Iberian Peninsula, European Jews and their descendants also avoid what are called kitnios, such as rice, string beans, and several other foods. To a large extent, the chemical industry is free from Passover issues, because so many chemicals are exclusively mineral-based, as are the processing aids. However, it would be inaccurate to say that the regulations of Passover do not impact at all. We will focus on two critical areas, flocculants and alcohols. A flocculant is an agent that separates solids from liquids. Flocculants are a subgroup within the polyelectrolytes. The polyelectrolytes are water-soluble conglomerations of giant molecules called polymers. The production of these giant molecules from simple molecules may be effected using a water-in-oil emulsion. The issue here is that oil may be derived from soy or corn, two kinds of kitnios. Ethyl alcohol is produced from carbohydrate materials, such as sugar or starches, by the single-celled fungus known as yeast. Commonly, a strain of Saccharomyces cerevisiae is used. If starches are used, they must first be converted to sugars through hydrolysis. The issue here is that grains may be the source of the starches. Kitnios contain carbohydrates, and they may be used as well. Acetic acid, potentially an ethyl alcohol derivative, also requires special investigation for Passover. I would like to close with a teaching of the great sage Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik of blessed memory. Rabbi Soloveitchik would emphasize that Judaism in all of the fullness of its values and statutes need never be cowed by reality. The unadulterated corpus of Jewish law and lore has an approach and a message for all of the numerous and multifarious developments in society. Every OU-certified chemical, in whatever country it's manufactured, testifies loudly to the awesome timeliness of Judaism's timeless teachings.